We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
You're tuned to WGNS, and in studio with us this morning, we have got Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland. How are you this morning?
Morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. A little chilly out there, but good.
Windy.
Is it really?
Yeah, super windy today.
Yeah, that's going to make it feel even colder. That's great.
That's right. Hey, this time of the year, Ashley and I walk almost every day, or, you know, walk the dog, and there's times when I'm like, okay, we're walking today, but nobody complained about how cold it is. So
is that possible?
We try.
So what all is new in the city? What's been happening? And man, how many residents do we have now?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Like $1 million question.
Yeah, I know. Representative Stevens brought a good bill last year where they're using data to be able, you know, to try to estimate that we did a census last year, a special census, but it is so hard to get people to respond to that census now. I think there are multiple reasons for that, but I mean, if I had to guess, I'd say that we're in the 170,000 range.
Yeah.
So it would be a good number for the city.
I don't know about you, but I get like 1 million spam phone calls a day on my cell phone. And then
yeah,
I even get random people knocking at my door sometimes.
Yeah, and that's the part that I think concerns me is that, you know, especially last year, a lot of the things that were going on is, you know, having your public safety, fire department, your fire and rescue, your police, you know, going in, especially fire, because that's who was doing it, going and knocking on people's doors. I mean, people, I know if you're like I am, I mean, when somebody knocks on my door, I'm like, who's knocking on my door and why are they on my front porch?
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
So, because, you know, now most of the time, you know, if somebody's coming over to your house,
I mean, yeah,
we just don't have surprise visitors anymore.
Yeah. You don't see many door to door vacuum salesmen anymore.
No. The only person that I've, you know, I routinely see now is, I think our house is a certified Amazon delivery drop-off spot. So,
for some reason, I think our house is too.
Yes, but especially at Christmas, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, you know, whenever somebody does knock at the door, if it's not like a FedEx or Amazon guy, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to answer it. I don't want to fool somebody right now.
No.
I don't want to talk to them about something they're selling or whatever they're doing.
I know, and that's the part. I always try to be, especially with spam calls, you know, like I Ashley, she'll laugh at me because there'll be times I am a prankster that I just want to talk to someone. Yeah. But there's also times that, you know, like somebody knocks on my door that I'll just say, hey, look, Andrew, I realize you've got a job to do.
Yeah.
But I'm not interested, you know, so.
You know, I told one guy who showed up at our house. The bad thing about it was right when we were pulling into the driveway.
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious. Oh, they just got home. Let's not bother them just yet, right?
Yeah.
They bombarded us the minute we got out of the car.
The one that I don't like is when somebody, it's dark and somebody knocks at your door and you're, you know.
That's not cool.
No, that's not cool at all.
Because you're like, you know, why, first of all, somebody at my door at night? And second, why would they do that?
Yeah,
you
agree.
Know, just. Some people don't think things through.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not interested. And that's, you know, that's just sort of the world we live in now.
Have you had it where you said, you know, I'm not interested, but I appreciate, and then they just go on with their sales spiel?
Yeah, I have. And
have to be rude.
A lot of times you're like, okay, I'm going to stop you there. We are not interested.
Yeah.
You know,
but they pull that.
Like, no.
Sometimes you just have to literally close the door.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, all right, so. Going on in the city of Murfreesboro, a number of years ago, Notes Live was all the big to-do, big talk of town, and we were going to get a concert venue indoors and out, but that fell through.
Yeah, so they ended up going, you know, it's one of those things, and it gets frustrating because I think that project had some interesting opportunities, but and this is what happens sometimes with these groups, they ended up going to another municipality that gave them a better deal. And
right in the middle of already saying yes to y'all.
Oh, yeah, they just had the contract signed, but then came back to us and said, hey, this is what this other municipality is going to give us. And we're like, great, go.
Yeah.
You know, this is the deal we offered. This is the deal we all agreed to. So you go somewhere else. So yeah,
I don't understand that, because if you negotiate a contract with a city, a county, whatever the case is, then obviously you want to be there for whatever reason, because they probably started the negotiations,
yeah,
first of all.
You know, I think what I've seen over the years, there are some organizations that you deal with that you get the get everything signed, the contract done, everybody agrees to it, the council agrees to it. And then after everything's signed, that's when the negotiating really starts. And you don't see that with people on the front end, you know, so you negotiate, you do everything in good faith. And I would say this too, it's the minority. I mean, there are a lot of people that we work with inside the city that, you know, when we try to operate this with the city is, you know, mean what you say and say what you mean, and then do what you say you're going to do. But yeah. What you typically will see and what with some of these groups is you get everything agreed on, and then all of a sudden everything starts to change. And we, I mean, we've had that happen two or three times. I think, you know, One East College is one that we've
had lots
of changes on that. But that came to last Wednesday. That came to the Planning Commission, the City Council for a joint meeting. It looks like that project is going to proceed through. I do think there were some concerns on the architecture and what the renderings look like. I think there's going to be some things that are going to have to be tweaked there. But the church, the venue space that they're talking about, that's moving forward. They're actually increasing the amount of for-sale condos, decreasing the amount of multifamily units, increasing the amount of office space that they're doing, and retail space. So there's a lot of really good changes that are coming along with that.
I was reading some of the agenda notes for that meeting before y'all had it, and I thought it was interesting because it looked like you guys were going back and looking at, well, here's what we arrange with Keystone Project, for example.
Yeah.
So this is what we have got to work with and can do with you guys. I mean, it gave you a chance almost to renegotiate the whole thing, it sounded like. But
well, I think it's important that, and you've heard me say this before, I mean, we don't get it right all the time. And it's very important, I think, for our community to know that your elected officials are going to tell you when we didn't measure up and we could do something different. And back in 2017, 2018, when the original One East College came along, I think there are things that were in that agreement that if we could go back, we'd not ever done that before. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are things that were in that agreement that we would have done differently. And we've learned over the last, especially through this Keystone project, of things that we needed to have in the agreement. And we had a meeting about a month ago with the developer and their attorney, myself and Adam Tucker, our attorney, and sat down. And I mean, we had a real sort of blunt conversation of like, hey, this is what we expect. This is what they were trying to do. And it actually turned out better than what I thought. They're talking about taking four floors off, so it's not going to be such a tall building. The parking garage will be wrapped, which means the parking garage will be fully surrounded, so you really won't see the parking garage. There's a lot of really good things that have come through that, but it's one of those things, man. I want to see it under, when it's under construction, that's when I'll say, okay, it's moving forward. But yeah, the other part that they did talk about is they've had to do monthly inspections on the church. They've had to do yearly inspections that a structural engineer has had to look at that church. The church is in good shape. They've committed that once that these changes are approved and moving forward, that they will immediately start on getting the church activated into what they're calling a white box, to where that would be either be a restaurant or a venue that would come into the church. So, you know, the community will see that happen immediately. And so I think there's some positives with that project.
So is that going to be incorporated with that historic bell tower there?
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, okay. The bell tower is the main, that 5,300 square feet in the bell tower, and that other portion that's next to it, I think that portion is not as old as the 1800s bell tower. But yeah, so that's all part of the venue that would be activated.
And by the way, if anybody has any questions they'd like to text in, all you have to do is text us at 615-893-1450. So looking at that One East College, the whole thing got underway back in, what, 2018, right when COVID was hitting.
2017 we bought it. The reason we bought it is we had lots of developers who were coming asking about the project, but they, everyone were saying, yeah, we're going to do our best. We're going to do the best we can to save the bell tower and the church, which is developer speak for, yeah, we're going to tear it down. And so that's why we did that. I mean, cause I think we already owned a third of the block already. The city did. And so it just made sense. And, so that's when we went through the process, and we went through a very detailed process to select, you know, different proposals. So I hope it'll move forward. I mean, that's been in my opinion, that's been sort of a black eye that has not gone through. I think it's important when we say there's not anything as far as selection that I think we could have done different. But there's been a lot of things that have happened since 2018 when that came on board, a pandemic, a semi-recession, the pandemic still, even though it's been, 4 years now, the hospitality financing market is really tough to get a hotel financed, especially one in downtown Murfreesboro where there's no proof that it works. And so like, look, I wish I had, $100 million that you could invest in a project like that, but I don't. But I have faith that I think, this project will be successful.
Now, that being said, of course, it started with the idea of a hotel being built as part of, One East College, where the old First Methodist was. But now at this point, that hotel, is that out of the equation?
Yeah, that was taken out back in 2020, 2021. So that's going to end up being... well, not too far from where we're sitting right now. That's the third phase of the Keystone development. Is a
Keystone, they're still planning for a hotel.
Yeah,
Lonnie's right. College, no.
No, and yeah, the Keystone, probably the Keystone location would be better for a hotel than the One East College, just simply because it's more centrally located.
Yeah, well, you can see it from Broad Street, it looks like.
So I think that's still something that is in the works.
So with the Keystone project at the corner of Broad and Church and the corner of Broad and Vine, with that project in particular, is that almost going to serve as an entry or a main entry point into the downtown square area?
I think it has the opportunity to do that, yes, because, South Church Street, Broad Street, Town Creek, that's under construction back behind us right now, that's where you're going to have the pedestrian bridge. So you're going to be able to have someone that would walk, Church Street, be able to cross, go to Town Creek. So I think you're going to see a lot of the activity that will be in this block and area where we are right now.
Well, I mean, it's direct access to I-24, and that's where most commuters who are from out of town, they're going to be commuting from.
Yeah, I mean, you'd see someone get off the interstate and come either straight
to WG Nash.
The bridge over Broad, or come down Church Street, and for that matter, come down 99. So
yeah,
we've really been working hard, and I mean, Scott, to transition. I see some of the things on social media that talks about road construction, and I had a lady email me a couple days ago talking about she moved here 4 years ago, and she just has seen no road construction in Murfreesboro, and I've was like, ma'am, I respectfully disagree. I mean, I drive around Murfreesboro every single day.
And maybe she doesn't drive.
I mean, the amount of road projects that the city has undertaken, I mean, just over the last 10 years it's unreal. I mean, it's dang near. I mean, if you add in Highway 99, 231, Thompson Lane. I mean, you start adding up all these road projects that have taken place inside the city. I mean, I putting pen to paper, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, Thompson Lane's $155 million, not including utility relocation. Yeah. I mean, there's probably been $1 billion worth of road projects undertaken in the city of Murfreesboro over the last 10 years or so. I mean, and that may be a low number. I mean, when you look at the bridge over Broad, you look at what we're getting ready to do on Old Fort Park. I mean, so we understand traffic is one of the it is the most important talking point and sort of frustration that residents have, and we continue to work with the state. We continue to, every time that we can build a road. I mean, look at Butler Drive that we just finished, Joby Jackson Parkway out where Bucky's, that entire interchange is being redone.
And man, walls are already going up at Bucky's.
Yes, I mean we're working really hard. It's a balancing act between, you know, like you'll hear people say, build the infrastructure first. Well, I don't disagree, and we try to do that. But, you know, what you see that we as a city do, and I want the residents to understand this, like we want to make Murfreesboro an affordable place to where we're not raising your taxes. And if the city went and built all the infrastructure and the city paid for it, well, then the taxpayer's paying for it. And so what we've been able to do is to leverage partnering with the state, partnering with developers who are building things and get them to pay for it. Now the timing, you know, takes a little longer, but at the same time, you know, we're not having to tell someone who's living on a fixed income that's listening to your radio show today, by the way, we're raising your taxes. I mean, we've had one tax increase over the last 30 years. We did that in 2018. And I would challenge and say this, and it's something that has been tough, but I think the city council is proud of. I mean, find another city that's our size and grown like we have that has not raised their taxes, you know, every 4 years, and we've just not done that.
Yeah, I don't know of another city growing like Murfreesboro with the tax structure in place like Murfreesboro.
Yeah, I mean, this year we're close to 55% sales tax versus property tax. And so there's going to be a time that, you know, that flips, but it's not now. And the city council has been really, look, we'll take criticism on a lot of things. And rightfully so, there are things that we could do better. But I just don't know a city that you could compare us to that has not had to raise their taxes way more than what the city of Murfreesboro has. And that's something we'll stay committed to, especially for those that, you know, are trying to make Murfreesboro affordable for the retired person that lives on a fixed income. And you tell them, hey, your taxes are going up. You know, I think Nashville went up 35 or 40%. Now, the issue with us is that our tax rate this year has gone down to like 94 cents. So even if we raised our taxes a penny, you know, the number's so low that any raise we have, the percentage is going to be high because the number's so low now.
Yeah. Again, Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland in studio with us this morning. Now, going back to Notes Live on Medical Center Parkway, the whole concert venue that kind of fell through,
yep.
And that's now completely wiped away, and there's something new that's being talked about there.
Thursday, we've had a private, so this tomorrow, our city council meeting, we've had a private developer that has come to us. It's public, so it's on the agenda, but Sean Hackinson, who owns the alley, you know, I think Sean's the epitome of a family-run, a small business. They are wanting to build an event center, event space, some office space, and then a restaurant on the third floor. So that's coming to the city council. Like, we have seen one of the things that has been an absolute need for the city. I mean, Embassy Suites came over 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems like yesterday.
But there's not really a lot of other event spaces inside the city of Murfreesboro that will handle large events. And so what we were trying to recruit to find a way to put a conference center, you know, on that site to really, I mean, I'm out at the Embassy Suites all the time speaking to different groups that are coming in. So what you're seeing is where the back portion of the property that backs up to the river where we're going to have a trailhead. There's also 9 acres that's next door that a private developer has also bought to build a hotel, you know, hotels. So this may, I think, we see as a good way that we're not putting taxpayer dollars into it. They're going to build it, and they're not asking for any tax incentives. They're not, you know, it's a good opportunity.
So you're talking about a future, almost a conference center of some sort?
Very similar. I mean, I don't think it's going to be the size of like what the Embassy Suites, but, you know, it's going to be something to where I think the pro forma, what they show is 250 to 300 seats for a venue on the main floor, some office space, then some also a venue space upstairs for smaller groups. But it's something that, you know, I think benefits the resident because we see routinely our local groups that need a place to be able to go. And right now, you know, Scott Graby has built a great space on the fourth floor of the Fountains, but it's a smaller space, so it's limited. So, I mean, I think this just gives another opportunity, and I think it being next to a hotel that's going to be built gives it the ability to be a conference center.
Yeah.
And, you know, the taxpayer's not having to pay for it.
you know, this is also going to open up an opportunity where, I don't know if you've been to conferences or conventions in places like LA or Las Vegas, but sometimes they'll have different events scheduled at different locations all within a mile or so of each other. But this could easily happen in Murfreesboro with some meetings held, let's say, for, say, at Embassy Suites, and then some at this new place, some at Scott Graby's location. I mean, this will allow for that, too.
Yeah, I think you're – and the other part, too, is it's – you look at where this is on Gateway Boulevard, and so we connected Robert Rose and Gateway Boulevard, the infrastructure. We've got Gateway that connects all the way back to Thompson. At some point, you're going to have Northfield Boulevard that will connect over. So we finished phase one of widening Medical Center Parkway. We're working on phase two right now, going from Thompson Lane back to the fountains. And then phase three will be from the fountains back to Broad Street. So all the infrastructure is being built sort of at the same time. So I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Now, another question that we've seen a lot of information about over the past couple of years involves the landfill. And there's some, I don't know, discontent there between the city, the county as well, and also with the landfill folks themselves.
Yeah, there's been a lot of developments over the last month that have happened with the landfill, and I think, you know, there's some frustration with several different things. It's probably good to go back and talk about the history about, you know, we've been dealing with the landfill for some time now on smells and operation and some of those things. And you know, I hope that that's something that is going to be alleviated. I can say, you know, the smell has been pretty bad over the last two or three weeks. So we've gotten a lot of complaints. We hit 4,000 odor complaints back earlier in the year. Yeah. Okay. So since we started our portal, but I think here recently, the city sued BFI again. And this is because now they are proposing a major expansion, a 70-foot. They're wanting to increase the height of the landfill by 70 feet, 13 million tons of additional trash.
Wow.
And it's probably good to go back. You know, 4 years ago, they applied for a lateral expansion. That went to the Central Tennessee Solid Waste Board. It got denied. So BFI Republic sued the Central Tennessee Solid Waste Board. The city intervened, and we joined in that defending that lawsuit. Well, they lost. So then they appealed that decision because they lost. They were going through the appeals process, and while they were going through the appeals process, they started this whole BS campaign of Rutherford First about how they were trying to lobby the county commission to basically give them their old county landfill to double the size of the landfill. Well, I think the county was very wise and said, no, we don't want to do that. And so the county, while that process was going on, BFI dropped their appeal, in my opinion, because I think they saw the writing on the wall. They were going to lose that appeal. And so they were then going through the process with the county to try to get that landfill. Well, that was denied. That's the, Scott, if you remember, that's the one where they had the big town hall meeting that...
Several meetings as well.
And yeah, so they had a big town hall meeting at a forum at the fountains, and their PR group posed as two Rutherford County residents and talked about how good landfilling is.
Well, I guess I didn't realize that part.
Oh, yeah, that happened. I mean, the next morning, we got some information that said, hey, by the way, these two people who got up and spoke posing as Rutherford County residents, they work for the PR group. Here's the website.
Oh, wow.
Then they got removed from the LinkedIn accounts. And I mean, it's like, I mean, no joke. It's like one of these days, it's going to be a great book to write.
Or even a movie.
Yeah. So anyway, so they then dropped that Rutherford First, which I would think they need to rename that Rutherford Last, because it really would be Davidson First is what it should be called, because you're bringing in everybody else's trash. But anyway, nonetheless, that got denied. So they got beat at the lawsuit. They dropped the appeal because they were, in my opinion, going to lose. Then they got beat at the county commission. So they're 0-3. Well, now they've said, hey, we're going to go straight to TDEC, and we're going to apply for a major expansion. And so state law is very clear on what process has to go and what's defined as an expansion. And so it is supposed to go to a regional board to be able to have that public comment, that they allow the community to be involved. And mm-hmm. So we're now suing them because they're saying they don't have to do that because it's an existing landfill, even though every documented piece of paper that they're applying says it's a expansion, a major expansion. And so we're suing to basically say, look, you got to go through the process. And, you know, and that's the frustrating part. I think TDEC, we received a letter from TDEC yesterday or Monday, because the same thing, we're asking TDEC to abide by state statute. State statute clearly says that if it's an expansion, this is the process to go through.
Yeah.
And TDEC is saying no, that that's not how they've done it in the past, and they don't have to do that. So, it begs to make you think that, you know, the regulatory agency that's supposed to be protecting the residents, who are you protecting? Are you protecting the residents, or are you protecting the landfill? And so I think there's going to be a lot of discussion over the next several days on, you know, what steps are going to be next with that. But we've talked to all of our delegation. We sent information to all the delegation. I've talked to three or four of the members. I think they're very supportive, saying, yeah, state law is very clear. And I think that's the part that's frustrating, is that the legislature in our delegation, they've put guardrails in place to say, this is what we're going to do to protect the residents. And when you have this is something we fight at the city as well, that, you know, a regulatory agency that's getting outside the scope of what the authority that the governing body has given them, that we've seen that at the federal level, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you see it with
every day
EPA or these different organizations, that they see the intent, and then they give what their sort of guidance or what they think that the governing body has said.
And it's so, like, their own interpretation, exactly, of what the law may be.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Representative Terry gave some great information on what the legislature has done to try to fix some of those things. So, you know, ultimately, we want it just to be done the right way. And you keep hearing this stuff, Scott, about a solid waste crisis. And I don't think it's a solid waste crisis. I think we have a suitable capacity crisis, where, you know, respectfully to BFI Republic, Murfreesboro is not what it was 40 years ago when this landfill was approved.
No.
It's a much larger city. So, you know, when people will say this, well, you're just wanting to haul your trash out somewhere else. Well, I would say that for 40 years we've done our part, and so now it's time for other people to do their part. I think that landfilling is there is a portion of that that probably will never go away. But the way that we were part of the TEC, Tennessee Environmental Council forum the other day, the state of Tennessee is 48th out of 50 in recycling and sustainability with solid waste.
I believe it.
And so here's the problem, man. And when you are listening to solid waste companies, lobbyists, and they look at the amount of lobbyists that they are hiring, look, they don't want this issue to be solved.
Yeah.
Landfilling is a super, super profitable venture. So you can hear all this stuff about, we're an environmental company, we want to do things environmentally. Well, there probably is some merit to that, but that's not the number one goal. The number one goal, and that this 13 million tons of additional trash coming into Murfreesboro and Rutherford County, it's about one thing. It's about money. And anyone who says anything different is absolutely not telling the truth and being factual with this, because if this were just about being sustainable, that landfill years ago would have just been made a regional landfill for Rutherford County, for Cannon County, for Warren County and Coffee County, which is the region that landfill's in. This is about one thing. This is about being able to take as much trash as you possibly can from our neighbor next to us and being able to take care of that. So I would say this as well, you know, and I say this respectfully to Davidson County, they have to figure out their trash issue too. So you can't say that you're this green county and that Nashville is going to be this green carbon footprint and then ship all your stuff to Rutherford County. I mean, it's.
I agree.
They don't go together.
You know, I think one issue that has made it confusing for residents, and it's starting to be a much clearer picture at this point, but from the very beginning, I think a lot of citizens looked at that landfill as, oh, it's a government entity. Oh, it belongs to the county. It belongs to the city. Because I think there was a lot of murky water there.
Yeah.
Or at least a lot of illustration of murky water being put out so that it would confuse a lot of citizens into thinking it's not a private business.
I do think that is a part of the playbook, is to make it look like it's this governmental partnership. And there is some partnership that's there. We process their leachate. I mean, I think the county back 40 years ago signed the worst contract in the history of contracts that shows, I mean, that what they're getting paid to be host agreements compared to what other communities paid. I mean, it's asinine what that contract says from 40 years ago, or from 30 years ago, from the late 80s, early 90s. But I think the other part too, you know, I've really got to sit in several meetings and listening to the mayor of White County, and they have a governmental run landfill. And he's like, we don't have smell and odor issues in our community. You can go anywhere in this community and not smell it. And there's a reason why, because if the county does not run that landfill the way it's supposed to be run, they don't get reelected.
Yeah.
And that's not the case with Middle Point. I mean, I think Middle Point, in some cases, it's unreal the amount of fingers pointing that comes back. And I mean, like, again, you can't make this stuff up. I use that term all the time. But when we sued BFI the other day, or we released a press release about how many odor complaints, and the gentleman who represents the company was sitting with one of the news media outlets, and this is his words. He said that our standard at all of our landfills is you can't smell the smell, or you can't smell the landfill 20 steps off the working face of the landfill. 20 steps off, so that's 60 feet.
Yeah.
I just made a social media post and said, I accept. We would gladly take that. But I mean, I think the overriding thing too, you know, I've always been a hunter and a fisherman, and I love the outdoors. I can't say that I've ever been like a activist environmentalist. I mean, I've learned all of this, and I've become one from a standpoint of like protecting our natural resources. You cannot tell me, Scott, that 35, 40 years ago that it was a good idea to put a mega dump next to our drinking water.
I think anybody would agree with you.
That's just common sense.
Yeah.
And so anyone that says that there are not ramifications from I don't care how well that you regulate, you cannot tell me that there's consequences that come with that. And so I think that's why the city council has been so diligent. I think there's been county leaders who've been very diligent to say, we're going to protect our residents. And there's been a cost to that. There will be a cost to that. But I say this, and I've asked this to people with on the other side, what's the alternative?
Yeah.
So we're going to continue working hard on it.
And you know, there have been many times in years past where TWRA would let folks know, let fishermen know, there is a high content of mercury in the fish that are caught in this area, and it just happened to be close to the landfill. And I don't know that the exact reasoning behind a high mercury content in some of the fish caught, I don't know the reasoning behind it was ever really announced or even found.
Well, I mean, Scott, there's our lawsuit, our federal clean air and clean water lawsuit is going through. We should see that go to trial in December.
So we may have some answers on that.
Well, we already have answers. I mean, I think it's public knowledge to see that there absolutely have been outfalls and leachate breakouts that go into that river. That cannot be disputed And saying what we have seen and what our experts have said. I mean, our experts have also got lots of information that I think will be eye-opening to the residents coming through. I think ultimately the city of Murfreesboro is spending massive amounts of money to make sure that we protect and treat our water, and we continue to do that to protect our residents. But, you know, you have to look 20, 40, 60 years down the road to make sure that we have the ability to continue to do that.
We got to take a short break. And again, Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland in studio with us. And by the way, before we head to this break, if anybody is wondering where our drinking water comes from, Stones River, Percy Priest Lake, I mean, that's our drinking water.
That's it.
All right, time right now, 8:52. We will be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you.
Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Recycling isn't just about tossing materials in a bin, it's about knowing which materials are accepted. Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City inviting you to come do business with our family. While you're Christmas shopping, Santa is on his way to Animal City. Stop in for pet photos on the 13th and 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Stop in to Animal City with your pets to take some great photos with Santa. That's Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
We're at Adams Place talking with John Hood. John, what do you like most about Adams Place?
Well, Bart, I guess what I like most is the personal attention that you get, the comfort and security, and knowing that you're in a very outstanding place.
What made you choose Adams Place?
Well, frankly, I only looked at Adams Place.
I'm Terry Deal. Call me for more information about Adams Place, located at 1927 Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Right now that time, 8:55. Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland in studio with us this morning. We've got lots of text messages. We'll try to fit a couple in real quick. Man, our number 615-893-1450. One of them was asking about the relationship between the city and MTSU, and I'll just try to downphrase it if I could, because it's a little long, but it's asking about, or it says, you haven't exactly been quiet about your concerns or issues regarding the city's working relationship with MTSU and the university president. Where does all of that stand basically today?
You know, I think first and foremost, I graduated from MTSU. There's not an organization, professional organization, I don't like church and things you separate, but there's not an organization that has changed the trajectory of my life more than Middle Tennessee State University. My brother and I were the first people in our family to go to college. I mean, I came to Murfreesboro because of MTSU, stayed here, met my wife here, have had my family here, have actively been involved in MTSU. I think the part that gets frustrating sometimes is, you know, I see the relationship, and look, there are things I absolutely could have done differently and look back and say, okay, let's do this. But there are things that I think the way that the university is structured, it's almost like its own little island. The city, we look at a lot of things. And so I think when you have a university that's focused internally a lot, that is challenging. And so I think, like, right now I'm on the committee, the Lightning Corner, working with MTSU on what happens on the entertainment district. And, you know, there are things that we've been able to work through on crime and some of those things. So I think when everything works well, MTSU and Murfreesboro are one and the same. I think the things that we've seen some in the past is, look, we're not always going to get along and we're not always going to have the same opinions. Our visions sometimes are different. That doesn't mean that you don't like the university. And so I think that's been sort of the rub in the past is, if you have a different opinion or you criticize, then you're considered not an advocate, and that just is not, I don't think, fair. But I mean, look, there's no one that's a bigger fan and wants MTSU to succeed than me. We may have different visions, and look, this is not about one person. This is not about a mayor. This is not about a president. This is about making sure that, you know, long after I'm gone and long after people at MTSU are gone, these organizations are going to be here. But I will say this, you know, I've long since lost my political filter on saying what I mean. When I say something, it's not reactive. I mean it. And so I do think with lots of different things that we can all improve.
I know we only have a minute left, but I saw this question. I thought this is important. National chains are increasingly replacing family-owned businesses. Does the city have plans or incentives in place to help these small, independent, locally-owned businesses survive better and thrive in Murfreesboro?
We're doing that this Thursday. That's something that we just talked about on being able to support a local business on hopefully a space that, you know, will provide benefit to the community. But we're going through that with our downtown study right now to be able to activate different people, the different businesses downtown, their second floors that they can't do anything because of fire protection. So we're looking at how that we help with that cost. So yes, I mean, I routinely say this, like you talk about these chain restaurants and you talk about these chain and large companies, you know, corporate headquarters. I mean, we have all WGNS, their corporate headquarters is the city of Murfreesboro. Yeah. So we've got all of these small businesses that, are the backbone of our community. And I think it's important for us to be able to support those. And so, you know, you go back and you talk about MTSU. I know that's something that MTSU is absolutely committed to as well. So I think finding those ways that we've got shared goals and we align. And I know on small businesses, that's something we 100% want to do.
You know, recently we heard the announcement of one of the chain fast food restaurants in Murfreesboro that literally just opened is shutting down one of their locations. And I thought to myself, that's a perfect example of what national franchises have the opportunity to do, which is not a good opportunity for them. It's like cutting toilet paper out of one of the restaurants.
Yeah. You know, I spoke to the firefighter or the fire marshal inspectors conference earlier in the week. And I routinely will say this, like, hey, you're at the Avenue. We appreciate all the chain restaurants that are here. We appreciate what they do for the community. But go downtown, see our small businesses and see our mom and pop restaurants. And I hate to even say mom and pop restaurants. I mean, we don't really eat at chain restaurants. I mean, like, we make an intentional decision that, you know, we're going to go and we're going to see Mitchell Murphy, or we're going to go see Sean Hackettson, or, you know, these different people that are small businesses. I mean, look, Demas's has been here forever. So Toots, we go to Toots quite a bit. I mean, so there are all these opportunities that I would say this to the person who texted in. The city can only do so much. We as residents also have to do our part to make sure that we support the small businesses in our community.
Well, it's really up to the residents more than anything to keep, you know, some of these businesses thriving by visiting them.
Yeah, shop local.
Yeah. Again, Murfreesboro Mayor Shane McFarland in studio with us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Scott. Merry Christmas.